Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius, the cheese industry's unique hands-on center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training specifically adapted for Anglophone cheese professionals. For more information, visit academymons.com. That's academiemons.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
So it's Friday afternoon. It's time for another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Cutting the Curd is engineered by Jack Inslee. And our guest today is one of my very favorite people in the dairy biz, Susan Bruce, who's the owner of Ollie's Farm. Susan, is it Ollie's Farm and Creamery or just Ollie's Farm?
It's Ollie's Farm and Creamery, but we go by Ollie's Farm as well. Whatever's happening on the farm, either it's Creamery or it's a farm, one way or the other.
Well, Susan makes some of the best butter that I have ever tasted, we were introduced last fall, and I just thought, you know, we've got to have you on the show to talk a little bit more about your incredible butter. Can you tell us first a little bit about your background and how you wound up on a farm making butter to begin with?
sure, and I want to say thank you for having me today. I was an interior designer for 17 years and put myself through design school by being a cook, and I fortunately went up through the ranks of Bob's Big Boy to some finer dining and ended up in a French kitchen with an excellent chef, and really learned what top-notch French food was like and what it was like to eat fresh spring greens. And this was back in the 80s when the whole French cuisine was coming back into fashion, and I caught on to cultured butter and never let go of it. After I got through design school, I started my own interior design practice, but I have a family, and we always ate butter. I always prided myself as a mom that I served my family butter, and there was never margarine in the house. There was always fresh, unsalted butter. And
that is, I just have to interrupt for 2 seconds and say that is so great, because my parents on the other side of the spectrum, and I love my parents very much, but they fell victim to the, you know, saturated fat craze that was happening in the 80s. And so I definitely grew up in a house with a little bit of margarine and a little bit of, you know, I can't believe it's not butter and stuff. And, you know, I forgive them for that now, but it was dark days for sure.
Well, I tell you, what you don't have makes you better, and I grew up in that house, too, and in fact, it was so bad. We used to have margarine and peanut butter frozen sandwiches. So I think that led me to a path of there's got to be something better out there than what I'm eating. So long story short is, you know, I never lost my passion for butter. I also had a grandmother that was from the South who always had fresh butter on the table and was an incredible baker. And I think once you eat just very pure food, that you just don't ever look back. You know, everything else is kind of second rate to that, and particularly butter. And I guess we'll go on to that further in your radio show, but butter is one of those foods that's affected by everything that surrounds flavors, smells, air, everything. So really, fresh butter is, there's nothing like it.
It's one of those elemental foods for sure. I feel like butter is, you know, it's a staple for any good cuisine, and especially, you know, French cuisine. So you have, you know, you had your career in design, you had your love of butter that stretched back to your culinary days. And how did you make the transition from that life to that of a farmer and butter maker?
Oh gosh. Well, all of my children, we lived in San Diego for a long time. And we transitioned out to Valley Center, which was an agricultural community. We were always kind of that oddball family that mom had her day job, but we always had a sheep, some chickens, huge garden, some goats running around. And from there, as my career grew, I just fell in love with farming more and more and more, and just vowed that someday I would have a real farm. And we had acreage, we had horses, we always had a little bit of it, but we didn't have what I call a real working farm and making food. We did the garden thing, but dairy is a whole nother aspect of it. And so about 3 years ago, my career was at an all-time peak, and I ended up getting cancer. And after I got cancer and went through my surgeries, my significant other said to me, what do you want to do now with your life? And I said, I want to farm. I don't care what I have to give up. I want to make butter, and I want to grow organic strawberries. And, you know, it was just, I was so determined to do this. One, because I had an opportunity, and I thought, you know, I'm never going to get this chance again. I sat my teenage girls down in a Starbucks. Tears were flowing, like, we're moving where? We're going to do what? And I just said to them, look, family, this is what I want. This is where we're going to go. And I'm so fortunate that I had a family that was willing to do it and ride this crazy ride with me and with Timo, and we ended up in upstate New York, a 230-acre farm, and we're doing it. We're doing it. We've had a lot of challenges, but we are persevering, and we're not going to give up, and we're going to keep moving forward, and we learn something new every day. That's what's so exciting about what we do, and I feel we're so fortunate to have this opportunity.
Well, the phone cut out just a little bit when we were talking. So you've moved upstate New York, and where exactly is your farm located?
Our farm is located in Schuyler Lake. We are about 6 miles north of Cooperstown, which is where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. We chose our particular farm for two reasons. It had amazing soils. We have Herkimer loam soil, which is Class A soil. So we thought, as beginning farmers, that, you know, the less we, the more we had on our side, the better.
Yeah.
We were also looking towards a permaculture design. So we have running water. We have a creek that runs through our farm. We have a forest that it backs up to. So it had all the components of water, great soils, flat land for grazing cattle, for doing crops. it had it all.
And had it been a dairy farm in the past?
Yes. The farm was established in 1834. Some folklore says that it started out as a hops farm, but for the last 100 years it had been operating as a dairy farm. They mainly did conventional milk up until about 1985, maybe 1983. When we acquired the farm 2 years ago, they were just kind of, they've gotten their herd down. They were no longer shipping milk. The barns were in horrific state. The cows were sick. So one of the promises that we made to the family that we bought the farm from was that it would always remain a farm. It's the best thing we have ever done. We are currently now working very hard to get this farm back into a working farm. We just put up all of our cattle fencing in the fall.
Which is a huge endeavor. The fencing is like, the infrastructure basically of, your pasture and everything. And you put up permanent fencing?
We did put up a permanent perimeter fence, and then we put up some fencing for paddocks. We have two Shire horses that we'll be using for draft work on the farm.
Wow.
We really want to try to minimize the use of the tractors, even though they're necessary. We are trying to employ the tractor back as it was in the 1930s and 1920s. We feel like it's very applicable to our farm. Our farm was a family farm. It wasn't a huge, huge farm. And that's the one thing that we want to keep it. We want to only work as much as we are able to as a family. And that's important to sustainability for us.
Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius. They instill their love for cheese, expertise, and experience so that artisanal producers are supported, fine cheeses are cared for impeccably, and customers are well served with expertise and enthusiasm. Deeply rooted in the glory of the French cheese tradition, Academy Opus Cassius integrates hands-on practice, formal instruction, and classroom discussion to train cheese professionals. Academy Opus Cassius exists at the heart of the Mons Fromagerie operational headquarters, where cheese undergoes affinage and orders are received, packed, and shipped. Surrounding the headquarters are the famed Tunnel de la Colonne and the original affinage center. Several Mons retail shops are nearby. The surrounding countryside is the home to producers whose excellent cheeses are cared for by the Mons team. France is the undisputed source of some of the world's greatest cheeses, deepest cheese traditions, and the highest level of technological research and rigor in cheese making and ripening. The Mons cheese business, now present in over 20 countries worldwide, has over 50 years of experience caring for cheese and imparting expertise. Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique, hands-on center for professional development, offering practical and classroom training specifically adapted for the Anglophone cheese professional. For more information and classes, visit academymons.com. That's www.academie-mons.com.
And we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Many thanks to the Academy Opus Caseus for sponsoring our show. We are very, very happy to have them as a sponsor. And they definitely serve as one of the most unique and credible cheese education centers in the entire world. So thank you very much to the Academy Opus Caseus for sponsoring. We have Susan Bruce on the show with us today, who is the owner and butter maker at Ole's Farm, which is upstate New York. And I also have my co-host Max, my son, with me here in the studio. So if anyone's hearing any, you know, funny little burbles and gurgles, it's Max. It's not me. So Susan, we were talking before about the cow comfort. Can you get back to that a little bit and how important that is for good butter?
Sure. The cows need to be comfortable and stress-free in an environment where their bodies in the old-style stalls where they were on concrete or some hay on concrete, we just don't feel as though they let down milk as easily. And if they're stressed, they're not going to give up as much milk. So what we've done in our barn is removing that middle concrete highway, which was very, in a lot of dairy barns from the early 1900s, and then the stalls on the side to be filled with sand. And it just allows for the cow to nestle in there, get comfortable. The Jersey is a bit of a smaller cow, so it suits our barn very, very well. And we just feel as though the better we take care of our animals, the better product we're going to get in the long run, and the more we can manage those cows so that their comfort is there, their surroundings are clean, pristine, we're going to get a better product. One of the goals on our farm is that we want a place where animals and people can cohabit free, not chaotic, and keeping herd sizes down to a way that our family can take care of them and not get overloaded with too many cows, too many animals. That's not what the goal of our farm is. We want to keep it small so that it's a manageable, sustainable farm.
And how many cows is that equal for you and your family?
For us, it's 10. It's no bigger than 10. That's enough to keep us busy. We will have two helpers come spring and this summer and probably keep them on. I have two children that are going to be in college next year. So it's important we do get some outside help and see what they end up doing at the end of their college careers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have they expressed any interest in joining in the family business, or are they still kind of feeling it out, being farm girls?
You know, my kids are awesome. And they've been on this ride from day one, and they have been fully supportive of the butter business. They've been fully supportive of the farm. They all think that having a family farm for sustainability is very important for them and for their future families. So,
it seems like the... sorry, the phone is cutting out a little bit again. But so let's move on to your butter making process. You're a pretty rigorous artisan, if I can put it lightly, and your butter making process is really intense. It's a long process. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why that makes your butter special?
Sure. Our butter processes, if we start with organic cream, it's not necessary, but it's necessary for me and for the product that I want to make. It has to be fresh. We get it. The next day, it kind of cures overnight. It allows the fat to settle. The morning that we receive it, we put it right away into the tank where it's going to be pasteurized. Unfortunately, in the United States, you know, raw butter can be sold, but trying to get it out there on the market is very, very difficult. So we do a low-temp pasteurization. And the key to cultured butter and good butter is cooling it down quickly so that those crystals can crystallize properly. And that is where good butter is made and bad butter is made.
Mm. All in that culture and process.
Yes. You ruin the crystal sizes, and you literally can get butter that tastes like sandpaper when it comes out of the churn. You might not know it while you're culturing it, but you'll know it as soon as you churn it. We learned that through hundreds and hundreds of gallons of cream in our test process, that the cooled down period is very, very important.
Seems like we're losing you again, Susan. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Lord. Being on the farm.
Yeah, I know. I know, right? So you said you cool it, you culture it, and then you cool it down really quickly so you can maintain that crystallization the way you want it.
Right. Then we cool it down, and then what we do is we add a culture to it.
Okay.
And that culture adds flavor, and it adds texture. And it also adds bacteria for health benefits of butter that makes it a probiotic. And the steps from the cool down of the pasteurization all the way to the end of the churn is critical for the way that the butter is going to turn out. What makes our butter particularly bothersome in a regular plant is that once we get down to that cool down temperature and we add our culture, we let it ferment for almost 3 days.
Wow, that's an incredibly long time.
It's an incredibly long time, but it is essential. When we started making butter and we begged and pleaded to get into processing plants to make it, they would be, well, no, you've got to get it out of here in one day. And I said, there's no sense in us making it if that's the case.
Now, I should back up for just a second and let our listeners know that you are working on completing a creamery on your farm, but in the interim, while the farm has been built out and you guys are doing the fencing and the barn and working on the creamery, you were using other people's facilities, and while that's extremely convenient and generous in one way, in another way, it wasn't good for you because since your culturing process does take so long and is so sensitive to being at exactly the right pH to get the right consistency for your butter, it's hard to get somebody on board with letting you use their space for 3 days.
Absolutely. It's almost unheard of. Butter making, people say, you just throw the cream in the churn and you turn it and out comes butter. Well, butter will come out, but for our standards, an excellent cultured butter isn't going to happen that way. We need that time in the vat for that butter to develop, for it to hit the right pH, and then to drop it back down to the right cooling temperature, chilling temperature, so that we produce excellent churns of butter. A lot of things can go wrong, even in that last phase of chilling the cream, prepping for the churn. And we've learned the hard way, and when we were first starting, we got moved. We set up in one processing plant. We were there, and we learned a lot through a lot of mistakes. Even the air temperature will greatly affect cultured butter or in general. And if it's too warm, it will just be mush. So it just really need to get into our own plants. We were in a processing plant. They gave us less than 1 day's notice. They were growing bigger. They said, you got to get out. We need the room. We went to another facility, and the old equipment couldn't accommodate our cultured process, meaning the tanks have to be able to pasteurize and then chill down, and then to get the cream ready for churning, we need almost ice-cold conditions, and that involves a huge chiller. So this is why we're at the point where we need our own plant. It's not just a want. It's actually a need in order for us to make the proper product that we feel is an excellent butter, cultured butter.
So to back up just a little bit, just to finish off the process, it's very specific to temperature. It's very specific to having the right equipment. But the basic process, like you were saying, is it cultures for 3 days. When the culture hits the right pH, you were saying that the cream almost becomes like creme fraiche, right? And then you churn it. So can you take us through the rest of the process that kind of gives it that handmade artisan quality?
Oh, sure. And I'm sorry, I'm outside on our farm because I'm not getting reception inside, so pardon all of us. The tractors and whatnot.
Hey, you've got tractors. We've got a baby in here. It's all good.
It's all live, right?
Yep.
So what happens is that when we cool down that cream, it becomes a nice, thick, luscious creme fraiche. You can imagine when we do it, 300 gallons of creme fraiche. It's like you want to swim in it. And we have to hit a certain pH with that creme fraiche. Once that is ready, we chill it down. We churn the butter, and when you churn the butter, you can definitely under-churn and over-churn, but what we are looking for when we churn is popcorn-sized kernels. Literally, it'll look like yellow popcorn in there, and that's when the milk separates, and that's when we get our buttermilk. We drain the buttermilk off of that. We keep that buttermilk. We feel as though our buttermilk is second to none, and I can explain that in a different radio show why, but we drain off the buttermilk, then we rinse the butter, and then we keep churning it until we can get as much of that water out of the butter. We don't want any condensation on that butter once we go to package it. One thing that makes us unique is our process at that point is all hands-on, literally. A lot of butter plants will take their butter from the churn and they'll pump it. Mm. They'll pump it either into a packager or they'll pump it into bags. But we take out that butter by hand in 5-pound blocks, if you will. We hand-knead it on a table to make sure that that water is out of there. And then I hand salt or hand herb or whatever we feel like throwing in there, honey, into that butter, into 5-pound bricks.
Wow. Wow. So there's a lot of labor that goes into that. There's a lot of sweat equity in every 5-pound block of butter that comes out of your facility.
It is a very hands-on intensive process. But for me as a butter maker, I know that every batch of butter that I take out, I know what it feels like. I know what it tastes like. Sometimes I salt it heavier than others. It kind of just depends upon what I have at that time. Every batch of butter is different. It is amazing when I was learning how to make butter, just how amazing, how different butter can turn out. And believe me, we've thrown away thousands of pounds of butter because it didn't cut it. And from there, we even take the hands-on approach even more for our retail sales. Uh-huh. We take the butter from those 5-pound bricks and we hand form them into 1-pound and 1.5-pound discs. So, and at that point, a lot of people were telling us, well, why don't you just do the conventional stick or the conventional block? But we want our butter to be distinctly different, and we do it in, if you will, like a cheese round so that it becomes the center of the table. We want it something that a food to be enjoyed alone, just as it is.
And they are beautiful, and they are really beautiful. I'm looking at the clock, and there's so much more that I want to talk about before the end of the show, but we only have a couple minutes left. So I want to focus a little bit on, where you're going from here. You are working on building out your own plant. And you started a Kickstarter campaign to help you guys get there, or is the Kickstarter campaign up and running yet or not quite?
The Kickstarter campaign is not up and running yet. We hope to be doing that within the next 2 weeks. It can be a pretty complicated process, and we're trying to keep things really simple. So hopefully maybe by doing this show today, we can bring some awareness to our Facebook page, which is Bully's Handcrafted Cultured Butter.
Oli's handcrafted cultured butter. Okay. Everyone check it out on Facebook. This is like, even if you can't, even if you don't live in New York and you can't buy this butter, you should donate for the better, for the good of butter across the world.
Well, and then we will post on our Facebook page when we are going to launch that. I want it to be a very simple campaign. We've kind of started wanting to do Kickstarter about a month ago, and people were telling us, oh, you have to have this and you have to have that. And I thought, oh, my goodness, we're making butter. We might just keep things clean and simple and easy. And so I've decided that we'll have a web page. We'll put our story out on Kickstarter, and we'll go from there. We really, right now, we are not making any butter. We were forced to close down our business. There's no getting around making butter in an inspected facility. We haven't to date have found a plant that we can move ourselves in and use up that much time. So we've started the butter in two different plants now and have had a lot of problems with that, for us to make it in a different way. And so we're ready to go out on our own. And that's what we want to do on Kickstarter, is to be able to raise enough funds to do the plant, get Oli's butter back out there, and start making it again.
Well, we, you know, at Cutting the Curd are 100% behind you. So anything that we can do to help spread the word, we definitely will do. And thank you so much, Susan, for taking the time to be on the show and explain to everybody the finer points of making a better butter. It's a really fascinating process, and I hope to see it back, you know, back in action in the shop and in the city very soon.
Oh, we do too, and thank you so much for the opportunity. And, you know, if you have questions on our Facebook page, go ahead and ask. And we just so appreciate, and you bring awareness to handcrafted cultured butter. We love it. We want to be making it, and we appreciate your fantastic support that you've given us over the last 6 months.
Oh, no problem. It is my pleasure. And, you know, like I said, in my stomach's best interest as well. Well, maybe not my stomach, but definitely my taste buds' best interest. So one more time, your Facebook page, just so our listeners can get it.
Sure. Our Facebook page is Oli's, and that's spelled Oli's, cultured, handcrafted cultured butter. And our farm Facebook page is Oli's Farm and Creamery.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much, Susan. And everyone, we will be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.